go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to another episode of The Juice. I'm your host, Solomon Giorgio, comedian, writer, and Jessica Biel's body double in Flashdance. Today's guest is a multifaceted powerhouse. She's hilarious and has no problem keeping it real. She's a comedian, former co-host of the award-winning podcast, Two Dope Queens, a New York Times best-selling author and publisher with her own imprint, Tiny Reparations, and now lead actor and executive producer of her very own sitcom, Everything's Trash, on Hulu. Let's give a big, juicy welcome to the one and the only Phoebe Robinson.
Hi, Solomon.
It is so good to see you.
Likewise. It's been a minute.
You are the hardest working, busiest person that I had the benefit of watching us from our humble beginnings and slowly watch you become this beautiful explosion of wonderment. So congratulations.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I am oh so tired.
I hope you are. I hope you are. I would think you would be a monster if you weren't tired.
I'm just like, okay, I want to marry a rich guy so I can take a nap. I'm like, I'm done.
Girl, I'm racing to that as well.
Yeah, I'm like, this is too much. I'm tired of creating things. I like... Yeah.
When I remember that when Cher had that quote, like, I am the rich man, I'm like, how about... I love that for her. Do I need that?
Yeah. That was cute, like, in my 20s, but now at 38, I'm like, Cher, you wrong, girl.
Oh, we're just rolling back the clock on feminism.
Wait, when did we meet? We met, was it like a decade ago?
Let's not do that to ourselves, because it's okay. Probably been longer than that. Because I think we started, did we start comedy the same year?
I started in 08.
I started in 07.
Okay.
So I had like one Bush year before I got to enjoy Obama.
Do you know I contemplated going to Washington when Obama got elected, but then I was like, it's going to be so annoying to like go there. So I didn't go. And yeah. Now I'm like, you fucking idiot. It was like the first black president.
And look, based on this rate, we don't know if we'll get another one ever again.
I know. What was I thinking? I was like, oh, I'm going to be so tired and like, oh, I have to like take a bus down that I can barely afford. It's like, it's fucking history, dog.
Yeah, I was so hopeful. I was dancing in the streets.
Me too.
Were you in New York at that time?
I was in New York. And what I remember a few things about that night. What I distinctly remember watching CNN and Will.i.am had that like weird hologram moment. Do you remember that?
Oh, what was that? That was weird.
I'm
barely remembering it. It was... That album, The End, just came out. So that was, yeah, that was weird.
Like,
that
and
was,
I'm like, we don't need to upstage Barack Obama with a fucking hologram, Will.i.am. Like, that's the thing. That's the moment. Do your hologram business next week, okay?
Oh, my God. But, all right, so my show is definitely, it's about gossip. I like gossip from just local fun places. And I know you're Ohio, right?
Yes, I'm from Cleveland. Whoop, whoop.
How long were you there before you went to...
I left when I graduated high school. So I was 17 going on 18 because I'm a September baby. So I turned 18 in New York. So it's been 20 years.
Damn.
I know. I'm like, oh.
I apologize for putting numbers out there, but I'm 40, so I've already overcame the damage of the 20 year high school reunion.
Yeah. Okay. I want to say I'm really looking forward to turning 40. How did you feel about it?
I think it's the best thing you'll ever experience in your life. It is truly this level of joy and comfort you have with yourself. Because people make life sound so much shorter than it actually is. Life is very long.
Yes, so long.
There are so many chapters to it. And I feel like the way I was, the concept of 40 as you're younger makes it sound like your body is collapsing. And I just realized that I've been listening to white people talking about their bodies collapsing. And I'm like, wait, that's not my genetics.
Yeah, it's tough. Some whites just age not so great.
My knees aren't like my 20s. They're not that way. But like I'm comparing my knees to twerking knees. They're still good. in comparison to like my knees when I was 20, and I can drop it and break it back up again. Yeah, that's different. That's fine. Yeah, I don't know. I was a superhero. I have regular human knees now.
That's so funny. Oh my God.
You will love it. I think it's like, it's at a certain sort of, like it's a wonderful freeing thing because you sort of stop being so harsh on yourself with certain, like with certain milestones with age.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, great.
Let's go back to Ohio.
I grew up in the suburbs of Cleveland and it's like a thing, like if I wanted to have kids, like I get why you would want to raise your kids there because it's like, you know, there are good schools and, you know, just like, I'm always astonished by people who grew up in cities, like people who are like kids in New York City. I'm like, I feel like you just grow up so fast. Yeah. And I think they're just byproduct of being in the suburbs. I think there is sort of an instinct by parents to like want you to just be a child for as long as you possibly can, which I think is like nice because I think also about like sort of being a child is sort of like your imagination and sort of not putting pressure on yourself to be whatever you're supposed to be as an adult. So I really enjoyed my time, but I was definitely like, Cleveland is holding me back. I'm going to come to New York like Felicity did. And I'm going to wear chunky sweaters and make out with guys. And like, I was like, let's go.
Obviously, gossip is a culture everywhere. What was it like in your family growing up and like just in the neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I know like, oh, I've had like cool career highlights in my life, like Michelle Obama or becoming friends with like Bono, but I am kind of a boring person. But as a kid, I very much loved Entertainment Tonight. I watched that show every single night. John Tesh, Mary Hart, Access Hollywood. Like I just loved watching
those tabloid TV shows.
Yes.
Hard copy.
Yes, but you know, like Entertainment Tonight still felt like journalism to me.
Because it came on right before the news.
Yes.
That was the last tabloid show before the news.
Yes. So I was like, okay, this has a very sort of Woodward Bernstein vibe to it. It did not.
Also, Mary Hart and John Tesh gave off real like anchor vibes.
Yes.
They would have transitioned into real news if they wanted to.
They took it so seriously and so did I. And like, so I think that was sort of my way of dabbling in gossip because I like to run a tight ship. I don't like people talking about my business, but like, I'm like, yes, let me know what's going on with the cast of Friends around 1998. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm all about that.
Were you like the quiet type in school then?
I was a person who sort of could like float between any sort of group.
Oh, we call those the popular kids. I don't know if you know that.
But here's the thing. I wasn't popular. Like I never had a boyfriend. I never, you know, I wasn't.
Here's the thing about how popularity works that I need you to understand is because I've had this discussion with many popular kids who didn't realize they were the popular kid. They say stuff like, I floated amongst the groups. I didn't really cause it. That means everyone liked you. Because you have to understand, those of us who were nerds in high school, we weren't floating from group to group.
and finding moments to hang out here and there. We stayed in one side and one side only.
Okay, that's fair. I will amend the statement and say I think I was popular, but like my parents ran a tight ship. So like I didn't go to like high school parties or any of that stuff. They were like really wanted me to focus on school. But I was always kind of the person, I wasn't a class clown because I had dignity. Like I'm like, I was not desperate.
That is the energy of a popular kid. I love this conversation because at the amount of times I've made a popular kid have a revelation that they were a popular kid.
But I think
and I'm
was,
not surprised. You are a cool person, so.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I just really was like a person who like, I think because I never wanted to do anything in comedy, I was always just sort of like, oh yeah, I'm funny. And I'm just like, you know, I could drop like a one-liner or whatever, but I never latched on to like, oh, you're funny. It should be a career. I just was sort of, that was just kind of my personality, you know?
Yeah. Like what got you to that point? Like what made you, cause I was also the same. I was never intentionally funny growing up. Like every time anyone laughed at me, I wasn't part of that process.
Yeah.
What was the road to that?
Yeah. So, you know, I always thought I was going to like write and produce like really serious Academy Award kind of movies. You know what I mean? Like I watched American Beauty and I remember being like, oh my God, that trash bag floating in the wind is me.
You wrote the word that you literally wrote firework that day for Katy Perry.
It was so pretentious, but I truly was like, I think deep down I wanted to perform, but I was like, no, it'd be like so cool to like create these sort of like prestige-y kind of movies. Yeah. And then, so I went to Pratt Institute and I studied writing with a focus towards screenwriting.
Yeah.
And then I did improv on like the school's like improv team. And I remember Chris Gethard came and like taught us a couple of times, which was like really cool.
But yeah, that's cool.
It was so cool. And then, but when I graduated, I was like, oh yeah, you're going to like, you know, make your way up through like, you know, the film industry. Mm-hmm. And so I was working at Picture House, which was like an indie film company for New Line Cinema in 2008. And one of my close friends from college, her name is Lindsay. She was thinking about taking a stand-up class because she always wanted to try it. And I was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, stand-up is like dumb. Like I just didn't.
And honestly, in abstract, it is dumb.
It's so dumb. Like, what are we doing? But I knew who like, you know, Margaret Cho and Chris Rock were, but I never saw that as a path for myself. And she was like, well, you hate your day job and this is only like 8 weeks. So this would be a fun distraction.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. And so I took a class at Caroline's on Broadway, July 2008, and that just changed everything. I was like, oh, I love this. And I just really, that changed my whole life.
I think the open mic scene that when we start in is usually the most insane situations we've ever been in.
Yeah.
There's a few people that I remember from my open mic scene that were just like crazy drop-ins. Like we had the guy that we call the Russian. He did impressions, but his voice wouldn't change.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
It was truly the most chaotic. He's just like, and that is so-and-so, and it's just his voice.
That is so funny.
I laughed hysterically, and do you recall any of those insane moments?
Yeah, I just recall, like, doing bringer shows. So people who are listening, bringer shows, basically you have to bring warm bodies in exchange for time because nobody wants to see someone who just started doing stand-up three weeks ago.
And this is how a lot of comedians lose their friends.
Yes.
Because we're like, hey, come to my show over and over again because it's the only way I can do time. And then eventually your friends go, I don't want to live this life with you.
I think it was the first or second bringer show I did at Gotham Comedy Club in Manhattan. And Tyra Banks was in the audience, and for whatever reason, all of his comments were like, oh my God, Tyra Banks is here. Oh, it's Tyra Banks. And it's like, she doesn't do anything in comedy. Like, she's not, it's not like the booker for Carson, but we were all like, Tyra Banks is here. We have to like crush for her, which is like, in retrospect, who gives a shit? But I think
It's so important to us when we first started. It's the most important thing.
Yes, but that was a thing that I didn't realize about doing stand-up. It's like you would just do like these hole-in-the-wall shows. And then like I did stand-up in front of Moby. Mm-hmm. I did stand-up in front of like Paul Giamatti. And he was like, oh, you were so funny. It's just like, why is Paul Giamatti at Joe's Pub on a Tuesday night at 9 p.m.?
Oh, there's, I think, Diane Keaton once confused me for another black comedian.
That's amazing. And so I think the thing for me with that is like, you know, you tell your parents that. And so my parents are being like, oh, so you're doing sold out shows and you're making all this money. And it's like, no, I'm very, very broke. So I think it took a while for my parents to sort of understand. They're like, okay, you're doing all these shows. You're going out six nights a week. And like, you can't pay your bills. Like, I don't understand what this is. And so that was always, it's kind of like a mind fuck, I think.
It
because
is.
It's like, there's almost no other industry where you have to work that hard, especially in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And you're not making money. Like I would say for the first, I probably didn't start making true money doing stand-up, like, consistently until 2017. So that's 9 years. What other industry?
But I was, like, almost, yeah. I was, like, 2017. So I was, like, a decade in.
Yeah.
When I was finally able to even exist as a person. It's like getting your doctorate in something.
With hecklers. With drunk hecklers.
I have a PhD in telling dick jokes. But you know what? I get paid more than a doctor now, so what? Go out there and help people, you idiots. Yeah, dummies trying to take care of other people's health. I don't recommend it. I make people worse. Were you mentioning a piece of gossip earlier that you wanted to say over here?
So, as we all know, I'm a boring Betty, but...
Which is an absolute lie. She was a popular person in high school, and...
But, you know, from time to time, I do set Google alerts for myself, you know, just... Especially when I'm promoting something, because I just want to make sure, like, the PR, but I'm not, like, checking myself all the time. But I did see that... The rumor is that my net worth is $14 million.
That is insane. Mine is $7 million. And I'm like, where the fuck is this money?
I'm like, my show is on Freeform, which is a network most people don't know exists. How do I have $14 million?
Where's this $14 million? There's this one where it's my net worth, and they also like, they guess where I was born wrong. My birthday is another day. Like they, most of it I don't give a shit about, but they guess that I was born in Lynnwood, Washington. And I was like, okay, first of all, the audacity. I lived there for 6 months and worked hilarious. At JCPenney. That was it. It's on my IMDb page.
No.
It says it on my own. And I have to just be like, oh, I guess that's just the way that's going to be.
I just feel like when people get facts wrong to that degree, especially when it comes to money, mm-hmm. they're like, everyone thinks you have a shit ton of money and they treat you differently. And it's like, I really don't. Like, if I don't continually work, the wheels will fall off, you guys.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This isn't... I don't have a Skims. I don't have a... You know,
no.
I don't have
if
any
I take
of that.
A break, this falls apart.
Yes.
This wig room, gone.
Yeah.
I'll be selling my wigs. I would be selling, and that's...
Listen, I have YouTube merch that has been signed by Bono that I will sell immediately.
See, that's... Look, you have a fallback plan. Your fallback is better than my fallback. That's worth more money.
But it's just
These wigs
so...
are synthetic. People can get...
To me, it's so funny that my financials are so grossly misrepresented because for the longest time, I was so broke and I held so much shame about being broke and like never wanted to admit it to anyone. Mm-hmm. And like, I do think that when we're making career gains, the assumption automatically is like, oh, you're set for life. You don't have to work anymore. You're like a gajillionaire. And it's so like, it's not true. It's like you pay for your agent. You pay for your lawyer. Literally every
25% of your income is already gone.
Yes.
The cost of living where you are is expensive. I think just people just assume this like one TV appearance is like millions of dollars. I'm like, no, it's barely $1,500.
And
but end of the day, my life is pretty great, so I can't really complain that much. You guys can guess that I'm making too much money.
Yeah, I'm like, everything's good, but I am also like, you know, like when I do red carpet appearances, it's like I'm coming out of pocket for hair, makeup, and styling. Yep. Like people, I'm like, do you think that like designers are just dressing me? Because they're not. They're not. I'm not Zendaya. They're not just tripping over themselves to dress me because I had a podcast, you know? Yeah. So I think for me, I'm just always like everyone, not everyone, but the majority of people who are in the spotlight have way less money than you think they have.
Yes, it's very true. I've learned that a lot. And it also, a lot of things don't pay that we have to do. A lesson that I learned many times over. But you know what? The great thing is I know how to be poor and I'm very glad that I know how to be.
Yes.
Like, I was so ashamed of it for my whole life. And I think that's the benefit of where I'm at now is that I know that I have a skill set that if you take everything away from me, you can't get rid of me because I will survive.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, I mean, so much of the shame, I don't know what it was for you, but I think for me, it was tied a little bit to self-worth, but it was also more tied to like, oh, this shouldn't be happening to me. I went to school. Mm-hmm. I'm a smart person. I'm a good person. So it was becoming this sort of like moral judgment of myself as opposed to like to pursue a career in entertainment. If you are not a rich kid, don't have nepotism, it is fundamentally going to be difficult and you're most likely going to go into debt in order to make it.
And I think that's the things like we always associate our finances with success. And also we also lose track of the joy of the journey and what we're doing because we are creators. And the best you can ever do in this world is create something. And if it sells, great. But end of the day, the happiest I've ever been and was me at my poorest getting to go to open mics and figure out how to tell jokes. And that is the truest wealth I've ever had in my entire life is that I got to cultivate, create, and participate in this wonderful, amazing community.
Oh, that moment of sincerity
was
like—
Did I say that? Where did that come from? I'm sorry. I might be too sober. Okay, Phoebe, it's time to read a couple of the juicy submissions we got from our listeners. It's mailbag time. I have a couple of submissions here and we're going to rate them. There's three ratings. Dry, boring. That's the dry is the first rating. Not worthy of our time. Moist. We're tantalized. We're having a good time. We're getting somewhere. And the last one is fully juiced. We are. Our seat is soaked. We are happy. It is salacious. It is delectable. It is the best we've ever heard in gossip.
Love it.
And here is the first submission.
Okay.
As a teenager, I babysat for this one woman and her unfortunately washed up horse jockey husband and also worked at a golf club. I started seeing the woman bring her children in for golf lessons with the club's hot golf pro. A few months later, Miss Ma'am was embroiled in a messy and expensive divorce because, drumroll please, she was pregnant by the golf pro. They're still together and both sleep around on each other 24/7. Messy, messy.
Here's the thing. First of all, I'm fully juiced, sufficiently soaked.
This is nah.
I feel like these are two trash monsters who found each other. And I'm like, great. I'm like, listen, if you guys both know who you are, you're in love, but you're like, I'm going to do my dirt. You're going to do your dirt. Mm-hmm. And you're still together. Great. Great. It worked out for them.
To me, it's just an open relationship. And everybody isn't that informed in that. And they're just like, what's going on? I'm like, they doing what they doing. Don't you worry about it.
But I wonder how the kids feel.
I don't think the kids know. Look, how are you aware of people that were cheating when you're growing up? Because I feel like there was a lot of adultery occurring around me and no one informed me when I was a child. Not with my parents. Well, my parents too. But my dad definitely cheated. and I knew that. Like whenever I hear like they got in a fight and she moved out, and that's all the information I'd get.
Oh, I always feel like, because a friend and I, somehow we were texting and then we like got on the subject of like Gary Owen, and we're like trying to figure out why he's getting a divorce. And I'm like, he had to have cheated. But that's been denied. But I'm like, he probably did. But I'm always just like, I feel like if you've been married that long, can't you just be like, let's just take a time out? Like, I feel like this, not to pick anyone in the Real Housewives universe as sort of an example of how we should live. But I feel like Meredith Marks and her husband Seth took a break, dated other people, saw that like, okay, but they got their fun in, and then they came back together. Why is that? And I know everyone on the show like throws it in her face, but I'm like, that to me actually feels
healthy.
Super adult. If you've been married for 20 years, sometimes you just need a break, I would imagine. So why isn't that just socially acceptable?
I agree, full-heartedly. I don't know who these people are.
Wait, do you not watch Real Housewives of Salt Lake City? It is so good.
I'm so sorry. I am unfortunately one of the few homosexuals in the world. That is. And it is a cult of gays. I absorb a certain amount of information. I just don't know what any of it means.
It's just so good. I would say dabble. If you're going to take a stab, watch a couple of episodes of Real Housewives of Potomac. Because it's so good.
I think I've seen one. And here's the thing. I know I'm going to enjoy it.
Yes.
And I'm now in the time in my life where I'm allotted so much free time. And there's so much of it, and it's going to occupy every second of it.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. So, sorry to derail us, but I just feel
it's totally fine. We're still on topic. But that's fully juice. Thank you for that submission. This next one, so here we are. We went to my cousin's wedding. She had saved up money for years for it, and it was beautiful. But the wedding itself was super uncomfortable. The bride and groom wouldn't look at each other during the ceremony, and at the reception, they stayed on opposite sides of the room from each other. And my cousin, the bride, got hammered on tequila shots and chain-smoked cigarettes the whole time. Come to find out, a few months later, that they've broken up the night before the wedding, but went through with it anyway because her deposit was non-refundable. Why do they keep... This is not the first time I've heard something like this, and it is absolutely wild.
I mean, I'm trying to imagine myself in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. Ideally, you would have broken up way earlier in the you know wedding process. But then I think maybe they just both were like trying to make it work and they just realized they couldn't. I feel like breaking up the night before a wedding probably would feel so embarrassing that it's just easier to divorce like 6 months later.
Yeah, I think like that whatever they broke up for is definitely something cataclysmic.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I was at a wedding where the bride and groom are openly unhappy, I would be having the time of my life. She mad as hell over there. I would be dancing the whole night, and I'd be checking in on them every hour. I'd have me such a good time.
So, but my thing is like, so they're doing the vows. They're not really looking at each other. I know I've seen this in movies, but don't you also have that moment where like, if anybody wants to object to this wedding, like, Wouldn't someone be like, y'all don't fucking like each other. What are we doing?
That's actually, a lot of ceremonies don't do that.
Oh.
But I think that's an option that we should bring back.
I think
you should, but also I think mostly because, yeah, people don't want anyone to have the opportunity to oppose their wedding.
That is actually fully messy that someone came up with that idea that at the last minute you could just disrupt someone's wedding and be like, I don't think y'all should be together. That's crazy.
And I think what happened is that there's a lot of people like me in the world who take that opportunity and not waste it.
I'm going to say I'm juiced by this.
Yeah.
And I'm so curious, like, do they do a first dance together? Like,
yeah.
Do they cut the cake together? Like, what happened?
Is there video of this wedding and can you send it to me what I'm asking for? Because the way I would have been at that ceremony laughing my ass off, but like under my breath at a church, like when I was a kid, I would have lost myself. I love... You know, in stand-up, when we're first starting, and after you're doing comedy for so long, you either love insanely good comedy or painfully uncomfortable bad comedy. If I was there, I would have zero control of myself because this is watching people be uncomfortable is the most hysterical thing for me to witness.
I just am like trying to imagine her walking down the aisle towards him.
I'm just imagining her just like looking like she's about to curb stomp him.
Yes!
On the way up. It's like, oh, I just mad as hell. Just face forward like this bitch. I'm just so sick of this damn man. This is fully juiced to me. If you have any footage, please send it to me. If you have any more details, I would love to hear it. This is perfect gossip.
Love this goss.
And that is the mailbag. Thank you so much for sending in your email. All right, Phoebe, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with the juice line.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to The Juice. I'm here with the incredible, the talented, the wonderful Phoebe Robinson. All right, Phoebe, now's the time in our show when we go to the phone. We call it The Juice Line, and I'm hearing from our board operator that today's caller is Nicole. Let's patch her in.
Please hold. Thank you. Hello.
Hello, Nicole. I'm here with the wonderful Phoebe Robinson,
Hi.
And I know you have a piece of gossip, and clearly that's what I feed off of. So
yes,
the floor is yours.
I do. So yeah, I'm from Salt Lake City, so that's where our lovely story takes place. I heard you all were talking about Real Housewives of Salt Lake.
Oh, yes, we were.
It's fantastic. I'm team Meredith Marks. I love it all.
Oh, yes. Yes, I love that show. Yeah, my dad's cousin has been in a few episodes. She's not the main cast member, but...
Wait, who is she?
Slightly connected. Her name's Angie Katsanavis. She was hosting the party that Jen had recently.
Yes, for Coach Shaw. Oh my God. Yes.
So that's my family. So it's a small city, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, basically the story is about one of my childhood best friends. We're still friends today. Her name's Gemma. And when we were kids,
great name.
Her older sister, Anne, was diagnosed with childhood leukemia. But no worries. She's all in remission mm-hmm. now. She's doing very, very well.
Good.
But she met this girl, Molly, through another family. And they're LDS because we're from Salt Lake.
Yeah.
the Petersons, and they knew this girl named Molly, and she was from England, and she moved to the somewhere in the Midwest. I can't quite remember. And basically, they started chatting, her and Anne, online, became really good friends, and she ended up coming out to Salt Lake for one of those, like, childhood cancer walk things. The BYU University lacrosse team was, like, represented her and Anne, which was pretty cool. She stayed at their house and slept over, and they were really close and bonded a lot over both having childhood cancer and leukemia. Yeah. And it was, like, just, like, a really awesome thing. And so when I was in, me and Gemma were in ninth grade, she was a bone marrow match for Anne, so she donated. Aww. And during that time, yeah, it was really sweet. Molly's parents, like, reached out to Anne and Gemma's mom through social media and were like, we know you're, like, having a hard time, like, we're here for you. And it was just, like, a really nice supportive thing. So this all happened around, like, 2013 to 2017. Flash forward to 2020, the Petersons, the other family, were scrolling through their Facebook, you know, as a lot of people were doing at that time, and they come across this account under the name Alexis, but the picture is of Molly, and so they're really confused, so they start investigating, and they basically find out that it is her, like, the pictures are her, but the name is not her, and that she had lied about her identity. Yeah. So basically, she lied about being British and faked her accent to them the entire time she knew them.
Oh my God!
And she was about 5 years older than she originally told them that she was. So she wasn't a teenager.
What?
She claimed she was around Anne's age, and Anne was 15 when she was diagnosed, and she was not 15 at that time.
For those of you who can't do math, that's 20 years old. She's 20 years old in this situation.
Yeah, she's 20 years old in this situation. Oh my God. But the worst part is she never had cancer.
No!
She lied about
Of course. Oh.
And yeah, it was really awful. So the Petersons called her and confronted her about it. They were like, hey, like, we found this account. Like, is this you? Like, what's up? And apparently she was, like, going between her British accent and her actual, like, American accent. And they said they never felt that she, like, regretted it or felt any remorse at all. And they've never spoken to her again.
Oh, my God.
This is like the Manti Te'o documentary, but, like, not famous version of it. This is so bonkers. There's so much that I'm shocked about. Like, pretending to be a teenager when you're an adult just feels really, I don't know why that is upsetting to me. That feels so fucking creepy.
It's just, it's the same as whenever I hear, like, a 20-year-old date, like, a teenager in high school. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly.
What's going on?
Like, it's not like, it's like, you're, yeah, you definitely are closer to in age, but really though?
Yeah.
Seriously.
Like, the second I got out of high school, the desire to talk to somebody still in high school jumped out of my body. I had, I had no intention to ever talk to anyone younger than me and still in school the second I got out of it.
Yes.
So crazy.
You know what, Alexis? You have a skill set that, not many people have, and the commitment to a lie that is unnecessary. That's the crazy part.
Yeah.
Like, this was years, like, years.
You said 4 years. Oh my fucking God. That was 4 years of her pretending to be a British person with leukemia.
Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah. I don't think anyone ever gave her money or anything.
Wait, so she just did this for nothing?
I guess just to lie to people and get their, maybe their sympathy from, like, being like, oh, I have childhood leukemia. I'm a kid with leukemia. People felt bad for her.
Wow.
See, this is why I don't approve of method acting. this is why I don't trust it as an art form. Character actors are the better way to go. Wow, Nicole, that was...
That's so good. That was harrowing. I love that.
That was...
Yeah.
You know what? I now have a small desire to go to Salt Lake City to see what the tea is between the housewives and...
and come on over.
And the cons. And well, it's not even a con. It's just... It's the weirdest catfish, non-sexual catfish I've ever heard in my life.
I love that wording. It's the weirdest non-sexual catfish.
Thank you so much for sharing that tale, Nicole. That was so wonderful. Thank
so
you.
Good.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Wow.
That is so, I'm just like that. I could see that being a limited series.
We should have a counter now of like certain kind of gossips that we get. We've gotten a couple of cancer ones.
Wow.
So some adultery. A lot of people leaving poop somewhere and not claiming it. there's categories. I'm going to go through and probably figure it out.
Wow.
And like do tallies and start seeing what kind of gossip. But I cannot mention your new show because it is so fun. It's based off of you and your actual brother's relationship, right?
Yeah, it's inspired by that. So yeah, my brother is currently running for re-election in Ohio.
Ah.
I know.
Congrats to him, because that is the battlefield of a state.
It's so hard. And of course, when you're a local politician, you also have a day job. So he works at a nonprofit too as well. So he's just like truly...
the best man?
Yeah. Yes, he's like the best person. But yeah, I think one of the things is like, as much as like, you know, for me, Sex and the City is canon. I actually just rewatched Sex and the City from beginning to season six, the end of season six when she gets back with Big. And like, even though I love those kinds of shows, I felt like every show about a woman in her 30s is like, is she going to get married? Is she going to become a mom? Is she going to get the house? And like, yeah. So for me, I really wanted the central focus of Everything's Trash to be sibling love, familial love. And so it really is that relationship between Phoebe and Jaden, who's played by Jordan Carlos. And
who is a blessing of a person.
He's so sweet.
He's the sweetest human being.
I love him.
Actually, the whole cast is sweet human beings. It really is.
That makes me happy.
Like, there's not a mean person that I can recognize that has been on the show. So
absolutely. Everyone's been great. And so I really just wanted to kind of show a show where a Black woman's messy.
Mm-hmm.
But she has confidence in herself. Because I feel like a lot of times if there is a messy female character, she's either depressed or she's self-destructive or she doesn't like herself. And Phoebe Hill loves herself. Even if she like messes up, she's like, I'm still a great person. You know what I mean? I just think that that's kind of like, I think it's revolutionary to be a woman of color who just likes herself. And has joy in her own life. I still think that's something that's not shown enough in TV. And so I just kind of wanted to do that.
And that's actually, it's refreshing and also visually well done too. Your hair in it is... you've always been good at style.
Thank you.
And I think with every step of success, you've gotten better and better at it.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I was in college and I would like... get like the Intamin's like four cinnamon rolls from like C-Town, which is like a very mediocre sort of grocery store near my dorm. And then I would get like a copy of Vogue and Style Magazine, Essence, Marie Claire. And I would just like read those magazines and just sort of like digest fashion. Mm-hmm. I really just wanted to have fun with it. And I think as I've gotten deeper in my career, I'm definitely sort of like, yeah, just fucking go for it and have a ball, you know?
Like, I remember so many of the outfits that you've worn over time, and I'm always still like, damn, I need to one-up it. And you know what? Phoebe, you are truly always going to be a star. And I'm so happy you came on my little podcast. And I'm always, always happy to see you.
It's so fun. It's not a little podcast. It is. You just feel good the whole time. You're like, oh, this is great.
I feel good because the people I bring on make me feel good. So I'm glad I created that kind of space.
Thanks for having me. And if I ever get married, good Lord, I hope I like the person.
I hope I don't. I want that divorce. Thank you to the incredible, the wonderful, the talented, the brilliant Phoebe Robinson for joining me on today's episode. Make sure to read her collection of essays, Please Don't Sit on My Bed in Your Outside Clothes, and be sure to check out her new show, Everything's Trash, streaming on Hulu right now. As always, if you want to tell your story on The Juice, send them in by visiting teamcoco.com/heyjuice. Also, please remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us all those stars. It makes a big difference, and I truly appreciate it. And thank you again for listening. And as always, have a juicy day.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.